You are listening to We Saw the Devil, an investigative and conversational true crime podcast that deep dives into fascinating criminal cases that are solved, unsolved, or ongoing. From America's Lori Vallow to Germany's Armin Mivas, we examine and discuss the world's most shocking cases. If you're enjoying the show, don't forget to follow us online. Check us out at WeSawTheDevil.com and WeSawTheDevil on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And don't forget, you can become part of the show by backing us on Patreon. Hello, everyone. You are listening to We Saw the Devil, and we are back with part two of our Lori Vallow year in review. If you haven't listened to the first one, I highly suggest you do, where Brittany and I break down everything that's happened in the Lori Vallow case starting back in 2021, and we're going to recap everything going into the new year. Before we air part two, really quick housekeeping. You can find us at WeSawTheDevil.com. From there, you can find us across all social media, as well as our Patreon, where it's for little as $3 a month. Pretty much a cup of coffee, guys. You can financially back the show and get a series of cool swag and gifts in exchange for that. Postcards, stickers, merch, things like that. So if you've been looking for a way to further support the show, head over to our Patreon and take a look to see if there's a package available for you. And don't forget, for the final show of 2021, we are going all out. It's going to be a really super fun one. We have our roast. We have a lot of different fun segments. One of those being Confess. Head on over to wesawthedevil.com/confess. You can anonymously submit your grievances for the year. What do you wish that you could say at Christmas dinner, or something that you want to get out into the ether anonymously before the new year? Like, let's start this off right. So head on over to wesawthedevil.com/confess and anonymously submit what you want to get off your chest before going into the new year, and we will read it on the next episode. So let's get into it.
And that takes us up to October. Now, this is where it starts getting really messy with the whole change of venue. Is the case joined? Is it not? Where are we going? This is where we really start to see a pickup in these back and forth hearings regarding this. So October 5th is when Judge Boyce says, okay, yeah, absolutely. It's got to be moved to Ada County. So I'm excited. Because that's here. And right? I still have this stupid hope that, like, maybe I can go to it. You know? Who knows? Maybe. We'll see which variants just playing around outside then.
We'll probably be on, like, the fourth one by then.
Yeah. I hope it's named something cool this time, though.
Yeah, right.
So now's in October is when we get a lot of these different interviews, too. Because keep in mind, this document dump. Where was that dump again? Where did it take
all
place?
All over our chest.
All over our chest. So in the Chandler PD world, they just kind of kept slowly releasing these videos. And this is when we get the interviews for Zulema, Melanie Gibb, Brandon, Alex Cox, Tylee Ryan. And then we have a 55-minute one with Lori. But I'll save you guys a little bit of time. 23 minutes of that, it's just her praying, sitting in this chair. Like, she just folded arms, eyes closed, praying. So really, it's
weird.
Like not that long. And I watched it. I got really excited thinking that, like, she'd be alone in this room. And she's like, she's got this perfect posture in her little prayer mode. And her foot slipped on the leather chair. I was so excited for sound and the idea that it was maybe like a fart. And it wasn't. And I was very sad.
I do picture you watching this and hoping for that.
I needed something where it's like, okay, good. I didn't just watch a woman sit for 23 minutes doing nothing. But
you did.
I did do that.
We didn't get a Pam Hupp moment.
Nope. Okay, so on October 7th is when we get even more material, 24 gigabytes worth of it. And this is where it's basically everything surrounding the death of Charles Vallow. So you get these never-before-seen interviews, additional audio recordings, text messages. It's everything. And it really helps piece together these different things of, well, Tylee said this, and this is what Lori said. Well, here are the text messages that led up to it. Here are the interviews that happened after the fact. It's wild. The original story we went into 2021 with is entirely different than what we ended with in October of 2021.
Yeah. Crazy.
Very crazy. Also in this dump is when we were first penetrated by Loinfire, the novel written by Chad Daybell via text message to Lori. And reading this was, it was basically like medicine to me. So I wasn't feeling great at this time. Part of the reason we haven't done an update in a while that I've been part of is because I had surgery. And the same day I read Loinfire, I was going into surgery. This was the funniest thing. And I'm so glad it was like one of the last things I read before that, before going under the knife.
If you died, at least you would die, what, satisfied? I'm not sure what you're trying to say.
I don't know. I'm terrified. I don't know what I'm trying to say. And now I'm starting to feel a little bit weird that I use the word penetrated as well. But yes, I was satisfied.
Okay, so what else happened in October? Give me a palate cleanser, please.
Of course. So we had these audio pieces of, again, the week of Charles' death. And this is where we actually get to hear Lori's call to the insurance companies trying to figure out, hey, how do I get the payout?
Where's that $1 million?
Yeah, just real quick. But it wasn't just Lori that called trying to figure out these different arrangements. We also had Chad Daybell. Chad called a funeral home and told them that he was trying to figure out how to take care of these, you know, cremated remains and have it get sent to New Orleans. But like, he was trying to think on the spot. So like the lady was like, where are you from? And there's this pause. Iowa. Like, cause that's completely different than Idaho. So yeah. You're good.
And his name was
Master
Chad
of
Daybell.
Disguise.
Chad Daybell from Iowa.
Isn't he supposed to be creative for a living?
I think that we've all read excerpts from his books and can agree that he is not.
I guess I'm just disappointed because I grew up thinking that when my teacher said you could be anything you want to be when you grew up, I knew that there was an asterisk at the end of that statement. I knew not everyone could be what they wanted to be.
Yeah, not everyone can be president either.
But apparently Chad actually did become an author. So like maybe I should have aimed higher.
That says a lot about you and me. Oh, God.
They both called the insurance. We have the audio and the transcripts of both of those. That came out in October. We also have a video interview that was released in October where Zulema sat down and basically explained the behind-the-scenes conversations of her and Alex prior to his death. Yep. And this is significant because, again, Zulema has been incredibly quiet this entire time. We'd never really had a lot of information about Alex to begin with. So having this and then all these other pieces of the massive dump absolutely changed the picture behind the scenes. There's this quote in that interview where she's telling the officers, she's speaking about what Alex told her. And she goes, he said to me, I think I am being their fall guy. I asked him, fall guy for what? What is it they are trying to pin on you? Cox looked at her and said, either I am a man of God or I am not.
What does that even mean?
Man, there's a lot of nuance to that statement.
Yeah.
But I think basically one of the things that we've seen in these document dumps is that Chad actually gave Alex a very special blessing, a patriarchal blessing. And in the Mormon religion, that's a very significant blessing that you only get once in your life, maybe twice if there was like some sort of special circumstance, but you get it once in your life. And it's not like a fortune telling at all. But the best way I can explain it is it's that level, but they take it seriously. Like this is someone who's very, you know, respectable in the community. Their one job is to give these blessings to people to help them for their guidance in the future. And Chad gave one to Alex. Chad was not authorized to do so, but you know, Chad just doing his thing. So in Alex's blessing, there were lots of different statements that we've seen printed out, things that were written down. And I imagine that his comment here of either I am a man of God or I am not is going back to the part where this is my one chance to redeem myself. I've lived this life of sin and apostasy. I've been kicked out of the church. I've done heinous things. He's raped children. He's ruined marriages. He's apparently grinded on his sister in front of his parents.
Gross.
At family events. Yeah. This is, he's gotten out of Colombia and done who knows what. This is not a good person.
No.
But this blessing that Chad gave him, probably the first time that he'd heard otherwise from someone in a religious circle.
Yeah.
He was holding on to this. And so I think for him, again, cognitive dissonance, I think he really needed to like be like, okay, as long as everything that he told me is real, maybe this isn't going to turn out terribly for me.
That's a really great perspective and not one that I would have come to organically on my own.
Again, like this is just with the Mormon nuances of all of it, it's important to look at those pieces. And another little disclaimer, I recognize again that none of this was like certified in any way. Like it was not a real patriarchal blessing. It's not that, but to them it was, right? That's what you can always say to crazy people. It's like, I believe that you believe this, right? You can say that and it's true. I believe that Alex believed that.
Yeah.
I think he was full of shit and he was a terrible human being.
Yeah.
But I believe that he believed those things.
I agree with you for sure.
On October 21st, we have yet another hearing where, if you can guess this, Robin, what do you think they decided about Lori Vallow?
She's still not competent.
Holy shit. She's off her rocker. Right. You nailed it. She was not competent yet again. So another 180 days on the clock. October 28th, we have yet another dump. This was the most beautiful, glowing dumpster fire that I have seen this whole case for a long time. Like, this was just such a mess. So here's what happened. And we've gone over this a little bit. But long story short, Lori Vallow's in her little hospital and her therapist person and her, they were watching her trial on TV together because that's appropriate. That's a good way to break away from crazy. And
yeah,
no, let's just watch you get tried for this. So they're watching her court case and someone somehow tells her, you need a different fucking attorney. And they gave her the homework, like her follow-up. If you've been in therapy, this is normal. But her homework was, why don't you find that attorney? Here's the phone number to the legal services of the LDS church. Call this number, tell them what's going on, and you're going to get taken care of.
No. Well, we don't know if that's what happened.
We don't know. I'm summarizing for sure. But this is what has been alleged by Lori's attorney, Mark Means. So Lori calls down to the church. We don't know what that conversation was. But we know that something was said to the point that that attorney then called Rob Wood and said, yo, I just got off the phone with Lori Vallow, just FYI. And then at some point, Rob Wood notified James Archibald, Lori's new death penalty attorney. So someone who's, you know, like a grown-up. He sits at the grown-up table at Thanksgiving. Mark Means was left out of that conversation. And then he filed this motion, which is basically just saying, this is some bullshit. So the statement that he makes is just alleging all kinds of stuff, saying we have to unpack this. We have to talk about it. So Lindsay Blake and Rob Wood fire back. They basically just say these are unfounded claims. And if you have a problem, don't go to the media. Don't release this publicly. Maybe come talk to us.
Yep.
Well, then the law firm down in Utah was like, since everyone else is talking about what happened, I think we need to make a statement too. And so they released their statement as well, basically saying that they called Rob Wood immediately. So like, everything's fine. They took care of it. Well, obviously that's not the end of it. So basically that's still ongoing. We still have to figure out all what actually happened in there, but this is still a huge point of contention between prosecution and defense. Okay, so that closes up October, and now we are back to November. So no big deal, but Robin, could you just catch us up on the mess that was November?
Oh, God. Okay. Strap in, guys. So on November 5th, John Pryor filed a motion of discovery of a, quote, full and complete record, end quote. Dramatic effect, and an evidentiary hearing in which he can call on witnesses like the state employee who we now know is named Nicole Cleveland. That also includes Is it Rob McConkey?
Yes.
Daniel McConkey. I really dislike that name.
I'm sorry. Say that again.
Daniel McConkey.
Is it the last name that bothers you?
The last name is what bothers me, absolutely.
Okay, so fun fact, that's actually a very prominent Mormon last name. That was the name of one of the past prophets of the church.
So on my dad's side of the family, I have someone who's married into the McCorkle family.
It's close.
So John Pryor wanted a special prosecutor to litigate this entire issue, right? And Brittany and I discussed this in a previous episode where he wanted everything to be fully transparent out in the open. He's like, no, we do not want anything sealed, relating to this matter. It needs to be out in the open under direct light so everyone can see it. Fully agree with him. When you have a public servant come out of the woodwork and be like, hey, got involved, got the church involved potentially, you want that to be completely above board. And what is our reasoning, especially in a death penalty case?
Yeah. But I mean, not because it's like, we really want Lori and Chad to have a fair shot. No. We just don't want this to get acquitted or like have it result in a mistrial. If you just put the effort in now, we can make sure that they die later.
In response to that, so we now have a huge issue on our hands, right? This is a mess. This is officially a hot mess. But also on November 5th, the prosecution and Rob Wood came out. They filed a motion stating, guys, I think this is getting potentially a little expensive. So let's examine the full scope of having the trial in Fremont County, as well as having all of the jurors bust in and sequestered there versus holding it in a different county. So they requested a hearing after basically giving and citing a handful of reasons of why they believe it should be held in a different county. So
it's crazy. Because keep in mind, the judge already ruled on this. Like, we are going to Ada County. And they're like, but dad.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Do you know why the prosecution is fighting for that so hard?
I think it comes down more to the jury pool. Again, prosecution, it's in their best interest. They need to convict. They've got death penalty on the table. They cannot afford to walk this. They just set everything up so that they could win this thing. They've got this bulldog of a death penalty attorney that has said nothing on Zoom. Lindsay Blake is ready to take over all Fremont County stuff. They are armed and ready to go with this case. And now they have to potentially limit their ability to have this be an open and shut conviction because now Ada County is involved. And here in Ada County, where I am, basically the mix of Mormon influence and whatnot, it's not as prevalent as it is in East Idaho. And so it's maybe going to be less of a sure thing. I don't know. I feel like this is a sure thing regardless. It doesn't matter where the jury's from, but I don't know.
It just seems so insignificant. I feel like this is pretty open and shut, and Rob Wood is kind of wasting time now on this.
Even in this like last hearing that they had, it was hilarious because they were like, well, driving on the highway and it's winter. And John Pryor jumps in. He's like, I've been driving on this highway. I've never had a problem. Like, it was just like so ridiculous. They're just like a bunch of, I don't know, mean girls to each other.
Yep. It's ridiculous.
The other big thing that happened, though, we had a little bit of a spotlight shine on someone that has escaped the stage for quite some time. Yep. And that is our girl, Melanie Pawlowski.
Yes. Finally. She was the one person. Melanie Pawlowski has been the one person whom everybody knows is involved to some degree. I mean, remember, Ian Pawlowski, her new husband, Brandon Boudreau, got shot at, all of that drama, right? Well, Melanie Pawlowski has had a larger, more involved hand in this. And we've seen that from statements to the FBI that Ian Pawlowski has made, her current husband. But for some reason, she's totally escaped the spotlight. Not as of November, guys.
November 11th is when we start getting a lot more information from Gilbert PD regarding all of the behind the scenes between Alex Cox and Melanie attempting to, I don't even know what to call this, like regain custody, shoot at Brandon, lie about all of it. It was a mess. But long story short, we basically have body cam footage that had never, ever been seen before.
It was crazy. I actually watched every minute of that.
If you could summarize, what's the story here? So Melanie's up in Idaho. Alex is up in Idaho. Brandon is in Arizona. What happened?
Okay, so we got a probable cause statement from the Gober Police Department, and they basically lay it all out. I'm reading from the document now, and what they say is, quote, between October of 2018 and October of 2019, Alex, Lori, and Chad identified Brandon Boudreau as a dark soul.
Lori, bum, bum, bum.
Yep. Which, as everyone knows, if you're designated as a dark soul, you usually don't stay alive very long thereafter.
Correct.
Lori had extensive communication with Melanie Lee Boudreau-Pulowski, which resulted in Melanie and Brandon's separation and divorce. On September 17th, 2019, Brandon provided Melanie with his new rental address per Melanie's request. The address was known to few people. Only Melanie had relations with the offenders. Between September 26th and September 29th, Melanie visited Lori and Alex in Idaho. Melanie then flew back to Arizona on September 29th, 2019. Okay, so Melanie goes to visit them between the 26th and the 29th in Idaho, and then flies back to Arizona on the 29th. Keep that date in mind. Between September 25th and September 30th, right, while Melanie's still there in Idaho, Alex, Lori, and Chad prepared for Brandon's murder. Some of those preparations included the Jeep Wrangler's window tinting, the removal of the Jeep's back seat, and the removal of the Jeep's back wheel, as well as the rental of a storage unit where they put the Jeep's wheel and the seat from the Jeep were all stored. And I think we all remember the storage facility video where you see, was it either Chad or Alex? You couldn't really tell in the initial video, like rolling the Jeep's wheel outside. That's what that pertained to. So Alex was actually going to the shooting range during this time. They were also using throwaway phones so Alex could communicate and plan it with Chad. On the evening of September 30th, Alex drove that Jeep Wrangler from Rexburg, Idaho, and arrived near Gilbert, Arizona on October 1st at approximately 7:30. On October 2nd, at approximately 7:18 in the morning, Alex looked up directions to Brandon's rental address while parked approximately 2 miles away, not exactly hiding it. At approximately 7:15, Brandon left his residence with his children. At approximately 7:19, so just 4 minutes later, Alex drove to Brandon's address and parked outside, where he waited for approximately 118 minutes, almost two full hours.
Real quick, I hope to God that in my whole life, I never, ever, ever have to go on trial for anything and have someone embarrass me and be like, this bitch was 2 miles away and she still needed GPS. Do you know how often I actually have to do that? All the fucking time. I have to use the GPS to get back to my apartment all the time.
Do you really?
All the time.
All right. At 9:14, that's 2 hours later, Brandon was coming home. He drove towards his wet driveway, and then Alex opened the back window of the Jeep and shot at Brandon's moving vehicle. The projectile hit the front driver's side A-pillar, but did not strike Brandon, which, thank God for that. Brandon called 911 as Alex drove away. So the police and Gilbert were like, we solved this. Like, okay, we cracked this shit. So they know exactly what happened. The report stated that had Alex still been alive, because Alex at this point had passed away, he was dead, he would actually be facing charges for attempted first-degree murder.
Yeah, and obviously. But then it's like stuff like this where you're seeing, okay, well, he was talking with Chad. He was obviously talking with Lori. And then the planning of Melanie just not even being in the state when it all happens, it's like, okay, that's convenient.
Yeah, I mean, she literally goes to Idaho, stays with them. They're all talking. They're all texting. They're all together.
It's literally for an alibi.
Yeah, literally just for an alibi.
Makes me so mad that she still hasn't gotten charged. However, I'm very grateful that we at least have a spotlight on her.
Yes, I think more people are going to be paying attention now and looking into other stuff. Also, in November, we got body cam footage from the police response to Brandon's 911 call. This is kind of our first glimpse at Brandon, right? Via a police chest cam as they showed up to the house in the home. And also, interestingly enough, the police arrived and they started searching to see if someone had broken into his house, because it was originally being investigated as an aggravated assault case. So that was fairly interesting.
Right.
And to me, my key takeaway from this, I actually watched this again today, to be honest. He said, I just went through a divorce. There was some crazy stuff that happened with her aunt who killed her husband.
Just throw it out there.
Yeah, just throw it out there. If you look through everyone, all the interviews, all of everything, Brandon Boudreau knew what was happening, like from the get-go. He and Charles suspected it. Charles knew, but Brandon especially, and Adam, Brandon and Adam both.
And I read too, so Brandon and Charles were at least somewhat close. And in one of these more recent dumps, we actually learned that Melanie blocked Charles's number from Brandon. And so after Charles had passed away and Brandon figures out, oh my gosh, someone blocked his number, unblocks it, and boom, there's messages there. And it's just so crazy because the two people who were figuring things out before Charles had passed, it was Charles and Brandon. They were the ones that were kind of trying to figure this out. And of course, Lori's not crazy siblings were talking with Charles too. But it just like breaks my heart because I think if they would have had just a couple more days, I mean, we're talking days.
Yeah.
It had only been 12 days since Charles found out that Chad and Lori were having an affair. 12 days later, Charles was shot. We know that Tammy was at least looped in. We know that Brandon was starting to figure things out. If they just would have had a little more time, I really don't think anyone would have passed away. But Lori and Alex beat them to this. And because they removed Charles from it, it completely messed everything else up that they would have been able to prevent a lot of unnecessary death.
Yep. No, it's absolutely true. They were onto it from the beginning and they just needed a little extra time. And it's hard, right? Because don't forget, Summer Shiflett was in on it. Lori and Lori's sister, their mom,
I mean,
Janice, everybody was in on this and supporting Lori and her version of events. And they all cut Charles out of the family loop.
Yeah. And these different interviews that come out like on a regular basis, the police are asking like, so did you guys like pray to have him die? And every single one of them are like, well, I mean, yeah, like it's insane. Everyone was very comfortable talking about the world without Charles in it while he was still in it.
I mean, she was so open about it. Right. And Charles knew and he was still trying to figure it out. And take care of JJ and do the right thing. You know, was he more inflammatory than he should have been? Was he poking a bear? Sure. But he definitely did not deserve any of this. And what's so sad to me, too, is that he had a support system in Adam and Brandon.
Right.
But Lori and Melanie and Summer and Janice and all of them and Alex ensured that they had breakdowns in communication and couldn't quite connect.
Right.
Brittany, tell us about the Melanie Boudreau drops, because it's like, boom, floodgates open.
Melanie Boudreau. So since she has not been in the limelight for quite some time, let me give some very quick backstory. Okay. So we have Melanie Boudreau and her dad, whose name is Steve Cope. Steve's wife is Christy Cope. Got it? Cool. So once upon a time, Christy was visiting Melanie and Brandon. This was back in May of 2019. So we're going back a ways. And she regularly used to visit, but this time was very different. When she went in, the house was disgusting. Holes in the wall. It was messy. The kids were just like all on devices, which like no judgment, but like, come on, when company's there, at least pretend.
And a little bit of an additional nugget. So when this actually happened, I actually know someone who knows the Copes. And it was actually worse than just that. The children had feces, like they were dirty. No. They had taken markers and like written and drawn all over the walls. Like it was absolutely filthy. Like filthy is an actual understatement.
And Brandon, we know, was doing pretty well for himself. Obviously, he had a decent life insurance policy or multiple of them. He was driving a Tesla and I believe he was living in a pretty nice house. So for it to be a disaster is like, holy shit.
Oh, this was, yeah.
This would have been bad.
Bad.
So while Christy's there, she's seeing this, she's seeing everyone on their phones, and Melanie would just be like, I'm going to the temple, and then just like bounce for a few hours. Just leave everyone in chaos. So that was in May of 2019. A month later, Melanie and Brandon were actually visiting her dad, So Steve Cope, they were staying at his house even. Brandon calls upstairs, tells him to come down, and Melanie announces to Brandon and her own father that she wants a divorce from Brandon. So Steve's like, all right, let me just sit you two down separately. Let's figure out what this is even about. And while he's talking with Melanie, Melanie says, I have to divorce Brandon because he's gay. And Steve goes, how do you know? I'm assuming is how the conversation went. So she starts by showing him a video. And in this video, Brandon is dancing at a work function, but there were other guys in the video. Now, we didn't see the video. At least I haven't. Have you seen it, Robin?
I have seen the video.
You have seen him dancing?
I have.
What was it like?
To me, it looked like a bunch of what you would kind of imagine frat guys look like. A bunch of drunk frat guys dancing.
Okay. Yeah. So like relatively innocent.
Yeah, totally. Never in a million years. No, you know, Gloria Gaynor, no Skylight.
Are there any chaps? Do we see any leather chaps?
No.
Okay. So relatively vanilla then.
Yeah.
So obviously Steve wasn't that satisfied with that either. And he's like, well, like, come on, like, how do you know? And so that's when Melanie then describes the vision that she had that confirmed that he was gay. And when she was in the temple, she had this vision. And it was basically like this little level, this meter. And she watched this meter, like the level in it grow. And it would go all the way to the right. And then it hit G, which means gay. So obviously he's gay. And Robin, you're a member of the LGBTQ community. Can you confirm these visions? Like, is this the thing that you... Is that normal?
I really was hoping not to be put on the spot to divulge more industry secrets, but it's true.
Okay.
At some point in our early lives, we have a dream and it sets our sexual compass and tells us what we are. And I was 13 years old and I just had that dream and it just went hard, G. I was like, shit.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, G for gosh gay. Here we go. The very next thing that Steve wanted to know was like, okay, but is there literally any other reason? Right. And Melanie goes, I had my revelation. Now you get your own. Steve goes over to Brandon and he's like, okay, so apparently you're gay. And he goes, no, that was literally a work trip. Those are my friends. And so then Steve picks sides. Guess who's?
Not Melanie's.
Not Melanie's. Steve immediately starts really questioning a lot about his own daughter at this point, her judgment, and he's incredibly concerned because her demeanor's different. She's hyper, hyper focused on these second coming conversations, light and dark spirits. She's obsessed. So obviously things don't go well from that point on. That would have been back in early 2019, mm-hmm. like the spring of 2019. Charles is shot and killed in July. And now we are in November of 2019. And this is where the more recent body cam footage comes into play.
Yep.
On November 14th of 2019 is when the chest cam footage comes out. Melanie actually tried to take the children, her children, away from Brandon's parents' house. Goes there, tries to leave with them, basically. Brandon's parents asked her to leave. They threatened to call police. Third attempt that Melanie made in the same period of time, they did eventually have to call the police because it's like, come on, lady. So police show up on this third time that Melanie has tried to come and take the children. And police note a bald man, aka Alex Cox, who she introduces as just a friend. Basically, Melanie had been banging on the front door and screaming that she had a court order. So the cops are talking to her about that, and they're asking, like, well, why would you do that? And she says, well, the kids are in danger because there was the shooting, and Brandon has some shady business deals, might be something to do with drugs, and he's in hiding, and I'm a victim. Can I have my kids now? Like, it's just like, she was not ready.
No.
Police take her down to the station and they're talking with her and they're trying to figure this out. She's sitting in this room. And for a little while, it almost looked like she was going to be able to walk away. Like, did you get that vibe too?
Totally. And she, you could tell that she didn't think that it was that serious, too.
Right. And then this police officer's like, yeah, so, I mean, we'll get y'all taken care of. You'll have this little thing to pay. Like, you're just trespassing. Not a big deal. And then then there's like this pause. And he goes, you know what, though? We just found out you did this twice already. Yeah, we're going to have to get you with trespassing.
Also, because it's domestic related. It was because she did it to someone that she was in a relationship with. And it was, boom, her life.
Domestic violence. And so he's like, so we're just going to go ahead and arrest you now. She's holding this clipboard and she's like, do you want me to like finish filling this out? It's like, no, bitch, get your cuffs on. We're going for a ride.
Watching her get handcuffed literally made me realize that that is my kink. That is my kink of kinks, guys, because we have not gotten the satisfaction of watching every single one of these people handcuffed and taken out, right? And so far, the only taste I've been able to get is Melanie Pawlowski. And God, it felt so good.
She was flabbergasted.
Yeah. Completely thrown.
It is the best. So... yeah, absolutely insane. So again, that was November 14th. And you would think, okay, well, great. Lesson learned, you know, but not so much, because on December 24th, 2019, Melanie actually called her dad again to say like, hey, can I come visit? So this time she thinks the kids are at her dad's house. She tried this over at the in-laws and now she's going again at her parents' house. Steve thinks that basically Melanie is assuming that the kids are hiding somewhere here, but he, you know, says, yeah, absolutely. Yes. Come on over. And she goes, great. I'm already here outside.
Yep.
How convenient. So she goes to the door and he goes, yeah, the kids aren't here. Your siblings are. And so she goes downstairs and she's like looking around for her kids, but ends up just chatting for a little bit. So the kids are not there. She stays to chat for a little while.
Like, I read that she stayed to chat for about 45 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
That's crazy.
So while she's there, obviously her dad is like, okay, she's here. I've got questions. And so he just mentions, Lori, how everyone's looking for these kids. Like, what is going on? Everyone's concerned. And then he mentions, you know, Alex as well and goes, aren't they murderers? And Melanie starts to cry at this. She starts to cry over just the idea that someone's alleging any form of negativity towards Lori and Alex at this point. Keep in mind, Alex had passed away just basically a few weeks prior.
Yep.
Knowing what we do now, I don't think it's too far of a stretch to say, like, when Melanie sat down for her interview saying, like, oh, no, Alex and I weren't that close. You know, like, we talked a little bit. Or even to police, she says that he's just a friend. She cried when her father mentioned his name.
Yep.
There's something there. And then same thing too with Lori, her whole thing of like, oh no, like Lori and I weren't like super close. We didn't really talk to kids that much. I mean, I don't know. Like, you literally started crying.
Yeah. I mean, because there's enough evidence present to indicate that she and Alex were super, super, super close.
Yes. And it's really interesting now, again, looking back on the whole year, we can see that Melanie was very calculated when it was finally time to try and take that attempt on Brandon and get the kids. Like, she had a lot of examples ahead of her of how to go about this. There's things we can look back on and say, okay, Melanie knew to ask for victims' assistance. Melanie knew to mention she feared for her life, feared for her children's lives. She was following the exact like language basically of how to go about this because of what she learned from Alex and Lori already communicating with police all these other times.
Yep.
So again, very glad that the spotlight's on Melanie again. Melanie back in the spotlight's fantastic, but we need to kind of circle back because I breezed over this really quick. Alex passed away in December of 2019, and we learned a little bit more about that.
Yes. So after Alex died, detectives obviously went through Zlema and Alex's phones. The investigation into Lori Vallow was already kicked off. You know, they realized potentially Charles Vallow, that murder that Alex had been involved. So they were under scrutiny. Therefore, Zlema was under scrutiny. In November, they actually released some text messages and whatnot, you know, between the group, right? Alex to Zlema, Alex to Chad, and so forth. So I'm going to read some highlights from this report. And maybe, Brittany, you can give a little maybe additional context in terms of LDS or nuance, things like that. So the supplemental report reads, in December of 2019, I assisted in this case by reviewing the cell phones of Alex Cox and Zuluma Pastenas. I first reviewed Alex's cell phone report and observed the following text messages. So Alex activated the phone on December 3rd. And on December 4th, Zuluma texts Alex and says that Raphael got a new phone number. Now, Brittany, where have we heard that name before?
Well, I'm going to just throw it out there that I believe it would be Chad or Dabal from Iowa.
So Chad Dabal from Iowa is clearly Raphael. The next day, yes. Alex sent a text message to someone named Guy, which, okay, cool. That's obviously Chad Daybell. His middle name is Guy. Chad did not reply to that text message. So sneaky. The next day, on November 6th, Alex began communicating with Chad and asked about Lily. Where have we heard the name Lily?
In our loin fire reading.
Yes. Lily, again, if you are behind on this, is another name that specifically Chad used for Lori. Based on the context of the text messages on Alex's phone, Lori started replying on Chad's phone. So Alex asked Zuluma if she ordered the storms that were occurring.
And like she, it's from Amazon or something.
Right. She's like,
babe,
it wasn't Prime eligible.
Did you deliver these storms? I can't tell if this was you or if I need to.
Are you sure it was Prime eligible? I don't know. So Zuluma replied and said she ordered the storms when they were having a barbecue. She just decided to order storms as they were grilling out.
Perfect.
Yep. Alice actually asked Chad on December 10th to give him a blessing because he was having a bad attack and couldn't breathe. If you recall, shortly before he died, he was having breathing issues and chest pains.
Quick side note for Mormon insight here. It's absolutely and totally normal in traditional Mormon teachings if you're not feeling well or if you're stressed out with something, if there's anything that's not quite right, you are actually able and encouraged to reach out to a worthy priesthood holder and ask for a blessing. That's a very normal thing that happens. And at that time, someone who holds the priesthood would give you a blessing, pronouncing some sort of like, you know, like comfort or healing or something along those lines. It's actually kind of like, I guess, like manifesting for someone else. So
interesting.
They just kind of took it a little bit extreme.
maybe a lot, but you know.
Like, I guess we need to actually throw an actual disclaimer out really quick. If you are Mormon and struggling to breathe, do not call a worthy priesthood holder. Please contact or visit your nearby ER because that is probably more appropriate.
Yes. Thank you.
You're welcome.
After that, the day after Alex asked Chad to give him a blessing, Chad asks Alex how he's doing. You know, hey, feeling better. Alex replies that he's winded every time he stands up and has a resting pulse rate of 100. Then Alex sent a message to Chad, quote, I feel like the poison from the spear in the heart has done some residual damage. Brittany, what does that mean?
I know.
Tell me.
I know what you're about to ask me. I've tried. I cannot think of what this is.
That is 100% code for something.
Yes, but it's definitely not code for something. I should say definitely. I don't think it's something tied to Mormonism.
So it continues. Alex received a call from Melanie Boudreau because, you know, she's not close to him at all. Never calls, rarely talks. After talking to Melanie for a few minutes, Alex then called and spoke to Chad. Alex then texted Melanie. That's a big no-go on your stuff. Just buy a new computer. They won't give it back to you. They are holding it for leverage until you help them. So just write it off. So they're so not close that they're literally giving each other pointers. Alex is giving her pointers on how to evade police.
Well, and keep in mind at this time, this is when the FBI was actually probably working with Ian trying to get stuff. Like, she had already had her stuff taken by the FBI.
Yep. And don't forget, also during this time and during the previous conversation we had about Brandon Boudreau, like shortly after the attempt on his life, the FBI was squeezing Ian, but Ian also told his ex-wife, Natalie Pawlowski. And Natalie Pawlowski actually directly reached out to Brandon Boudreau herself. I mean, it's just like a hot mess weave of people, like web of people here. So here's something else super telling that I think that we all can probably agree on. Chad then texts Alex and says, hey, I paid all of the bills on the Rexburg house. If you recall, Alex had an apartment in Rexburg, right? Like the townhouse. Alex replied and said that he was just going to let it go with all of his stuff.
Crazy.
Now, what does that indicate to you, Brittany?
I honestly think that this was another preventative way of making it look like Chad had nothing to do with anything. Like, oh no, like I paid his bills. Of course he wasn't going to die. Like, why would I pay for something if he wasn't going to be here? And then because they're idiots, they're texting about it. And Alex is like, oh, you don't have to do that, man. I was going to die anyways.
Yeah, I feel like that's pretty much a key context, like key clue here of Alex just saying, no, I'm just going to let it go with all of my stuff. I feel like Alex knew he was dying.
I feel like Chad was like, hey, wink, wink. I just paid all the bills. Wink, wink. Like, I don't see. They're just not smart.
No.
And I'm not saying like I'd be able to do better. No, I totally would. I would definitely be able to do better than these guys.
Yeah, it's pretty bad. It's pretty bad. What in the world does poison from the spear and the heart mean? If any of you have ideas, yeah, please throw us out. Comment on social media, whatever. Let us know what you think that means. If you have some additional insight. And then also, again, I believe that Alex knew that he was going to die.
Yes.
All right. So the tail end of November, lots of back and forth discussion on where the trial is going to be taking place. And Judge Stephen Boyce has pretty much kicked that can down the road. So much is going on. It's just kind of like, it's not important to really talk about that right now. And then we have the hot mess with Lori Vallow, Nicole Cleveland, and all of that. John Pryor, you know, ringing the bell, trying to get a hearing to go like over everything. Also, what happened, though, super interesting, is Rob Wood wants to restrict Mark Means from filing anything on behalf of Lori Vallow unless co-signed by the co-counsel, Archibald, until Lori Vallow is deemed competent. So they believe that Mark Means representing Lori is unethical due to his previous representation of Chad Daybell, you know, her husband. I find that really fascinating. That is one of the pettiest things I've ever heard of.
I know. They are just such divas about it at this point, and it's fine. Like, just let them just be angry at each other for the rest of this time. But I actually do agree. I can't believe it takes a motion for this to happen, but I think it makes sense for Archibald and Means to, like, communicate if they have the exact same client they're trying to keep from dying.
No, I completely agree.
It's just so bizarre to me, but... yeah, trying to get him off of the case because he represented Chad for a hot minute. Like, come on.
Now, don't forget, too, guys, that this has already been brought up. Rob Wood caused a huge stink last year when he was like, no. Mark Means cannot represent her because of this conflict of interest. And Judge Boyce, they had a whole special hearing about it. And Judge Boyce must have been satisfied because he found that there was no conflict. So this has already been decided. And then here Rob Wood's like, this man is incompetent, which he's not wrong. But
you agree.
Yeah, exactly.
Everyone agrees.
All right. So then on December 2nd, we had a hearing. There's a new trial date. Unfortunately, I mean, we obviously knew it was going to be true. This trial has just been kicked down and kicked back and kicked back. The original trial at this point was supposed to take place in 2022. But with everything that has been unearthed and everything going on, Rob Wood's like, nah, man, at this point, I need more time. So the entire trial is now set to start January 9th of 2023 and last through March 7th.
Three.
Yeah,
23.
We're not even in 22 yet.
Did your jaw drop when they said that? Like, I thought for sure he spoke a typo.
Yeah, no, I did too. And this trial is supposed to last until March. Literally more than 2 months. This trial will be longer than 2 months in Boise.
I just want jury duty so bad.
It's possible.
It's so bad. It's all I want.
And, you know, it's so far away. John Pryor is now filing motions. He's pissed off and upset, and he doesn't think that it's fair that Chad Daybell has sat in jail all this time waiting for a trial, and it's going to be more than a year away.
This is what I don't understand, though, is he, like, complains about that, but then when it comes to like, okay, well, do you want to separate the cases? Because then we can. And he's like, no, we got to keep them together. And it's like, well, what do you want then? Like, you guys have to come to some sort of agreement. You can't just be mad at the opposite of everything the opposing side says. Like, it just seems like they're trying to fight at this point.
No, it's very true. And it's very, very, very petty.
Yeah.
So the pretrial conference for Chad has now been set at November 9th, 2022. We have 11 months to wait.
It is going to be so long, and I'm sad. I'm sad about that.
Me too. But, you know, think of what else is going to come out. It's going to be quiet for a couple weeks, and then boom, 28 gigs of data and shit that so you have true. To go through. And I have a feeling, my prediction, guys, my New Year's resolution is to be able to see Melanie Pawlowski get handcuffed once again, or Melanie Boudreaux, rather.
It's the same thing.
Yeah, same thing.
Whatever last name she's wearing, it doesn't matter. We just need her in cuffs.
Again, yeah.
I'm sure we'll intercept some more jail mail in the meantime.
I hope so. We are long overdue a letter, Brittany. I know the jail mail takes a while, but it's been a month.
You know, I'll see what I can rustle up and see if there's anything just hanging out in the P.O. box or something.
That's it, guys. That's pretty much the year in review for the Lori Vallow case. Can you believe that we have gone on this ride this long at this point with us? We're closer. Well, I can't even say that. I feel like we're closer to justice, but then I see that 2023 date and I just shake my head.
Yeah, I'm a little too overwhelmed to even be thinking about 2022.
Right? If we'll still be alive then, you never know.
Who knows? Glass half full as always, Robin. Thanks for having me on.
You're welcome. So that's it for today, guys. We wanted to set it up, do a full year in review. The next episode is going to be our overall true crime year in review. We have some really cool segments ahead. And don't forget, Brittany, do you want to talk about the confession thing? Let everyone know again.
Yes, please. Guys, if you are going to be with your family and friends this year for the holidays and you have something that you want to get off of your chest, go to wesawthedevil.com/confess and say to us what you wish you could say to them. Don't use names. Don't use anything too identifying. And we will read our favorite pieces of hot mess to the rest of you.
I love, in the words of Marie Kondo, I love mess.
We love mess.
Yes. Beyond that, guys, don't forget, you can follow us all across our social media by going to wesawthedevil.com. From there, you can find us, again, all across social media, as well as our Patreon. If you're not familiar with Patreon, for as little as $3 a month, you can financially back the show, make a statement, and say, no, I really love what you're doing. I want to financially back and get some cool shit while doing it. Stickers, postcards, which, by the way, patrons should have received their monthly postcards for the month. That episode will be out next week for our patrons.
Who doesn't love mail? You know, like mail that isn't a bill. It's fun to get mail.
Right? Postcards have fully resumed back in order, and we will have that monthly Patreon-only episode. Also, ad-free episodes. I know that you don't like stopping and listening to ads every so often, so... yeah, become a patron and you'll get ad-free episodes and cool shit.
Is now the time that I should interject the vaginal mesh commercial or?
Yes.
Okay. I fucked it up. I said vaginal mess.
Who am I to judge? All right, guys, that was it for today. We are finally fully caught up in the Vallow case. Thank you for joining us. Thank you for listening. Again, you are listening to We Saw the Devil. Until next crime.